Hi, today's August 14th, 2022. I'm Todd Agassawar, my good friend John Westfall, and my other good friend, the esteemed Don Sorcinelli, back with us once again. And this is Movie Views Podcast 419, and this is the back-to-school podcast, our annual back-to-school podcast. So the good Dr. Westfall is back to school in front of the classroom. Soon? Yep. Is that coming up soon? Has that already happened?
Tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, I will be having my first class of the fall semester, and I'm excited to get back in there. I was actually thinking about we have all our meetings the couple of days before, and I was thinking, I got to get rid of this junk and actually get down to what I like doing, you know, actually being in front of students. And so, yeah, tomorrow.
And Don, I think you have one or two sons going to college now.
I have one who heads off in a little over a week and a half. Well, a little under a week and a half now, a week from this coming Wednesday. Mm-hmm. He'll actually be going off for his freshman year.
All right. So exciting times. I vaguely remember that time when my daughter went off to college. Let's see, 9 years ago now. So it's been a while. But it is an exciting time, and good. I'm glad to have you both, because you both are actually engaged in the back-to-school process. I'm more distant, although my daughter did return to grad school last year. So, but I didn't have to go buy her anything. She already had all the stuff she needed. So anyhow, I just wanted to offer some of my observations as the old folks, as the oldest person here, and with the oldest child here. And that's first, I want to revisit. I bought, as John knows, I bought a Lenovo Chromebook Duet 5 on Amazon Prime Day, and I got delivery about 2 weeks ago. Didn't really get a chance to play with it until this week. And a couple of options. First, at $300, it was a steal. You know, a detachable 13-inch OLED Chromebook. But one thing I'll notice and is that some colleges really want you to use Windows. And in fact, the good Dr. Westfall really wants you to use Windows, even though he's a Mac user.
Yeah, I don't care if you use Windows, Mac, or Linux. I just don't want you using a Chromebook, because there are so many times when we run into compatibility issues with them. I think it's probably possible to use a Chromebook and be successful in any college class, but you're going to need a higher level of sophistication. Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, if you have a higher level of sophistication, you probably didn't want the Chromebook. You probably wanted something else anyway. So
yeah. So John's calling me a country hick, but that's fine. It's okay.
A technologist that enjoys exploring different operating systems and different platforms.
No, Dr. Westfall, you are not wrong. I am a country hick and proud of it. I have grown up in places with one television channel, but right. And I liked it. But
it is interesting. I think it also, the last year for me has been, and Todd, while you had a daughter who went through this process 9 years ago, for me, this was my first time. So I was comparing it to 40 years ago, pretty much in the process.
It's different, just as FYI, Don.
Yep, so many things have changed. But one of the interesting things when you mentioned that about what to buy for a laptop, one thing that's changed is my son's school, for example, had created a Facebook page for parents. Mm-hmm. That was by invitation. It's a private group. You had to apply to get in. Yep. They would actually check to see. But it's been an unbelievable resource for so many people in so many ways, especially first-time parents with their kids going off. But one of the things that has come up is, there's a number of different factors. What do you buy for the computing platform for your mm-hmm. kids?
Yeah.
And the one good piece of advice is, if you're not sure, do everything you can to find out based on your child's major, what they may be doing and might do. For example, as the son of an incoming computer science major, I made sure that while processor was important, mm-hmm. Storage was important, RAM is God. Because of virtualization, when you're doing possibly with different platforms and things like that. So the day, you know, a lot of parents were like, well, I've got this and it's got a fast processor, but it's got 8 gig of RAM. And in 2022, as an IT person, I can tell you 8 gig of RAM gets lost pretty quickly on a Windows machine.
Yeah.
And actually, MacBooks, I'm finding 8 gig now. If you're running the Office suite, for example, and trying to do anything, it can really bog you down. Never mind if you're trying to do anything more power user oriented, like I said, you know, VMs, things of that nature.
Sure.
But yeah, it was interesting. I ended up making a point of that when it came.
So what did you end up? What kind of platform did you end up getting? I assume Windows, or Mac.
I ended up with a Windows for him. Ended up with an HP Pavilion that's running one of the AMD Ryzen chipsets.
Yeah, I have one of those. Nice. The older one, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. 32 gig of RAM.
Running and, Windows 11?
He's running Windows 11. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. He's running Windows 10 Professional right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I made a point to make sure he had Pro because I wanted to make sure he had, if nothing else, Hyper-V, never mind any other virtualization tools.
And BitLocker, presumably.
Yep, and BitLocker, yep, yep. So, yeah, it was, it is interesting from a machine perspective. And I was really interested in reading through the threads, as I was mentioning, you know, depending on what your child's major is, you know, what things you need to be aware of or, you know, what you should be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
John, and to back you up, almost universally, anybody that said, what about a Chromebook? usually had a lot of parents going, oh, no.
Interesting.
Well, one of the issues that we run into in higher ed is that the programming on a lot of our third-party integrated websites, you know, learning management systems aside, but, you know, the textbook publishers are the biggest offenders for this. They don't exactly care about interoperability on anything, you know, so they feel absolutely nothing with telling you, hey, our software only works on Firefox on Windows. Yep. And anything else, sorry.
IE8 on Windows. No.
Yeah. Can't really predict.
Listen here, Mr. State Government.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny.
You can't really predict what your kids are going to get unless you're talking about within the major or talking to other parents or talking to other students about, you know, what publishers are these classes using. And, yeah, it can be rough.
You know, it's funny you say that because when my daughter returned to grad school last year, she said, hey, I can't run this whatever it was. It was some kind of online, I would think it was an interactive tool for one of her classes. On her MacBook. And I said, what? And because, you know, she had the latest version, Mac OS, and blah, blah, blah. And so I checked it for her. And I says, it's Java-based. Why won't it run on a Mac? I mean, other Java stuff runs in a Mac. But then I said, Java, you know? So I said, well, you know, you've got Parallels. Let's just run Java in Parallels on Windows. You have a Windows 10 license. Still didn't run. So finally, I said, oh, boy, I've got a Windows 10 laptop I don't use because I don't use Windows at home anymore. So here, let's see if it runs. And finally, on a real, not even Intel, it was an AMD Ryzen laptop running Windows 10. Am I running Pro? Can't remember. It ran, but not Parallels with Windows, not Mac OS. It's, you know, Java, you know, write once, run some places, you know, whatever the slogan is.
So incidentally, when you say that, my son's first semester includes an intro to Java course.
Ooh.
Which should be interesting because he'll get a lot of theory, and then I can sit down and tell him the reality.
Yeah. Yeah, you can choose from 10 libraries. 8 of them are junk. And these frameworks, don't use them.
And John, the other point, I think you folks, if I recall correctly, are you a Microsoft 365 school?
Yep, we are.
Yeah. And it was really interesting for me because the day my son got his email of acceptance to start setup, the first thing they did was they wanted him to go in and sign in. Mm. And as soon as I saw the redirect to modern off, I said, oh, I guess you're getting yourself a free copy of Office Suite.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and that's ironically, that's another question that gets commonly asked from incoming parents is, well, what do we need for software? Do we need to buy an Office license? But the Microsoft 365 for Education, you know, typically the license is, I took them straight to the portal and said, see that install button? Yeah, let's go get that software.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you see that because when you know, again, this was 9 years ago. When my daughter started school, I bought her Microsoft Office 365 for Education. I think it was $99 for 4 years, yep. Which is fantastic. And I think her sophomore year, her school said, you know, we really should, you know, you guys pay a lot in tuition. We should just really include it. So they did.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really nice. The weird thing that I run into is that I have students that don't really know that they have it because they got so used to Google at their previous institution. And I literally this summer I was working with one where I literally had to say, I have told you repeatedly I want you doing this on Office, so I'm not accepting any more Google Share emails from you. This has to go to Office because I'm doing all this track changes and markup and comments, and you're not seeing any of it because you're opening it in Google.
Yeah.
So
yeah. My, my son had spent 4 years pretty much in Google for Education and a Chromebook for the vast majority of the time. So going back to a Windows machine was like
jarring.
It was a change.
Like, Dad, why does it take so long to boot?
Although I gotta say, those new Ryzen chips are
pretty fast.
Yeah. As a matter of
mine
fact,
is a 2019, so it's a little aged. It can't even run 11, by the way.
And the 32 gig,
that must help.
We ran Windows updates, and as somebody who's used to that, again, an IT guy who knows what it can be, how painful when you're first provisioning a new box on Windows updates, my eyeballs popped out of my skull at least three times from the speed of things. So, yeah, that one of the things that's always a good piece of advice is for school, and I think, Todd, I think based on what you purchased 9 years ago, and you're trying to get as much life out of a machine for their college education as possible. It's not like we're a business that we can depreciate it and and get all kinds of breaks on it. So one of the things I always recommend is it's worth the upfront investment too. And they're not as bad as you might think they are expense wise when you figure a good piece of hardware is going to last them 3 to 4 years.
And once your student, child is probably not a good word anymore, but once your student has a .edu account, they can get pretty decent discounts from a number of hardware manufacturers. So
yes, absolutely. So, but yeah, it's interesting because for me as well, and this is one part that Judd probably hears about but doesn't have to deal with. I had to look at all the technology associated with moving into a dorm for the first time as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
which is different from 40 years ago, Don, I just want to say.
Just a little bit.
Absolutely everything is so different. Going back, the last year has just been one culture shock, culture and tech shock for me. One of the things that's interesting is, trying to look at, what in addition to that laptop, what is he going to need? And, you know, things like
Xbox. Yeah.
Well, that's a foregone conclusion that thing's going with him. I was like, okay, what's he bringing that's electronic? What are you going to need as a result and especially because of fire codes and what's UL approved for strips and
most people won't think of that, by the way. And there's a lot of non-UL approved peripherals out there. It's shocking.
Yes. Yeah, it is. You've got to be very careful. But we did find, for example, he's sharing a room, but they had for his bunk bed, they had that attaches to the side. It's like a holder, but it also has a Qi charger.
And
it attaches to the side so he could just drop it into place, you know, at night before he goes to sleep. And
that is awesome. That's in the dorm?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we found one of these.
Oh, you found one for him. Okay, oh, I thought it came with it. I was like in shock.
Oh,
no. Because I was going to say, when my daughter, again, this is 9 years ago, and my daughter went, I was like, oh, what printer do I need to buy? And then I read the parents' thing. It says, do not buy a printer for your child. There's a printer in every dorm, you know.
It's interesting. They say if he wants to bring a printer, yeah, it has to be a cabled. It can't go on the wireless network.
Yeah.
So they have to hardwire it in. But yeah, it's funny because even like the little things that are like technology adjacent, like a lap desk that has a holder that gives you enough space to use your mouse. It's funny. Because he does have a desk space, but if he wants to work on something, you know, just while he's sitting in bed or something, you know, it's all those little things that you start to think about, and how, like I said, how many power strips, how many extension cords.
Of course, you know, now with USB-C, it's a lot easier than it was, you know, 9 years ago or 40 years ago, for that matter, when there was no USB anything. But, you know, one of the things I found, it might not be an issue now, but when we went to campus, my daughter had a Sprint. Her iPhone was on Sprint at that point. And that's just historical because she got my old phone number, which was on Sprint. And I said, here, just take... I had three phone numbers, right? So I said, you can have my Sprint number when she was in high school. And that way I didn't have to create a new account. But anyway, she was on Sprint and the coverage at her campus was just abysmal. I mean, you'd walk, you know, like 100 feet and you'd like, she has no signal. So
we had three opportunities before, leading up to this, between a college visit, the accepted students day visit, and then the orientation visit, where all of us put phones through the paces.
Yeah, and it was okay.
Around campus, but it's a good point, depending on which carrier you have. Although, fortunately for him, it's not like he's in a major metropolis, but he's going to school in the western part of the state, Keene, New Hampshire, and there's good coverage there for pretty much for all the carriers.
Okay, so I would say similar. My daughter also went to a school in a small town, but that small town happened to be the capital of Oregon, and it still had crappy carrier coverage. And she was across the street from the state capitol. I mean, you could literally see the Capitol Dome standing almost anywhere on campus. And still Sprint was like, you really don't need coverage here.
Well, our state motto is live free or die. And yes. There is an asterisk next to it that says except when it comes to cell phone coverage.
I have a live free or die license plate, by the way. That was given away by some Linux shop years and years ago. Oh, it's DEC. DEC gave a Live Free or Die New Hampshire license plate. You know, bogus with, you know, says Linux on it or Unix on it or something.
Yeah.
But at any rate.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Like I said, this whole experience for me trying to equate it to anything a generation ago is just so you feel
there's no
like
comparison.
I feel oftentimes like I lived in a cave, and I had just discovered fire in the wheel. Like, by comparison, it's just, you know, everything related to, and it's amazing too. And I don't know, John, if you can speak to it, but from the university's use of technology leading up to incoming students coming in, whether it be email communications, Zoom meetings, use of social media to communicate. It's amazing how much interaction students and their parents can have with the school before they even set foot for day one.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. To me, it's amazing and fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a great use of all the technology.
When you have the school doing what they need to be doing. I mean, IT in higher education is much more fractured than I think we think about it. Whereas every institution I've been at, very few of them have a cohesive level of technology across the board. And I've seen what happens when admissions doesn't have the same technical abilities as student life or, you know, academics. So you've got this weird world where admissions is hosting Zooms and student life is still rocking their Twitter accounts and academics are saying everything we do is over email. Do not ask us to do anything else. So students have to sort of
fax in your exam.
Yeah. Students have to be able to do a number of things. Like I was in a group of students yesterday and our campus is our learning management system that we use is Canvas. And I told them, do not rely on the Canvas calendar for all of your to-dos. You still need to write down all of your to-dos or keep your own list, because if you rely on Canvas and you've got a professor that doesn't load that assignment up until after it's due because they're making a gradebook entry for it, you're going to miss it because it didn't show up in your Canvas to-do list.
I'm starting to think that the list of colleges and universities that don't use Canvas at this point is the short list. It seems like everybody I talk to these days seems to be using Canvas.
Yeah, the Canvas is done. I started using it in 2014, and it was still really it was built out from a student perspective in 2014, but not from an administrator or faculty perspective. And so they've added in a number of competitive features now that bring them on par with Blackboard and Moodle and the others. But they are still, I think, one of the more user-friendly environments. I love Moodle. I used Moodle for years as my own personal LMS, but it is not user-friendly if you don't think like a programmer.
Yeah, I tried to introduce Moodle a number of years ago at a company I was at, to try, because we were trying to standardize on end user, our customer training. And I said, we could really, for blended learning, I'm like, this is a great tool that we can be using. And that was at a time when the LMS, like you lost them at the L in LMS, and it was tough to sell. Never mind if there wasn't anyone else in the organization that was fluent on customer, training kind of thing. So, but I agree. I loved working with Moodle. I thought it was really awesome for an open source package. It was so robust. But yeah, it's interesting. I will say, it seems like my son's school, fortunately, they seem to be, at least at this point, through the application acceptance, onboarding, all this stuff, they seem to be very, the different groups seem to all be in sync, at least relatively speaking. We'll see how that goes as he goes into his first semester, and gets on campus. But, again, it's like I said, the use of the technology for all this just is mind boggling to me when I consider everything was paper based. Everything was sitting by a mailbox or running to the post office, and now it's so real-time interactive. And honestly, we've been very fortunate. His school has been very, from a parent perspective, they've done more Zoom calls and, webinars and things like that to try to help us be as informed as possible. And that goes beyond, actually, even after he gets on campus. They do a thing where they have parents of students who are like juniors and seniors for a weekly series where you can log in on a Zoom
call. Interesting.
And they'll tell you what's going on with the kids, freshmen typically, and answer any questions from a parent, a peer perspective.
Right.
So it's pretty cool in that regard. So like I said, again, it's like, wow, talk about a lot of change in a reasonably short period of time, thanks to tech.
But at least you have a step ahead of it because you're in tech. So you've seen some of this stuff coming through. Imagine the parents that, I'm thinking about some of the verticals out there where they are still doing things the way they did them 10, 15, 20 years ago, technically, where email is still the height of what they do. Those people with their kids, it must just be, wow, you mean video calling is a regular thing now? And, you don't have to print these things? You can just send them electronically?
Yeah, it is. It's I can only imagine. Like you said, yeah, there is. It has been. You're right. Now that I think about it, I can remember the first couple of Zoom calls they did for parents. Do you remember those early during the pandemic? The folks that had never really done video conferencing.
Oh
before?
Yeah.
And it was like taking the conference call to the next level of frustration and, head shaking. Yeah, those first few, I can remember there were the folks that would come on and not realize their camera was on. And you're like, please turn your camera off. Please turn your camera off.
It's like, hey, you know, not to get into your space, but I just really don't want to see your nostrils that close.
Well, no, my favorite was, you know, you do get a lot, especially when folks use tools, and this is across the board, for the first time they use Zoom on a phone and don't really realize that it's still, the camera's still going. They think it's my phone. I've actually seen some, I've had been on some Zoom calls where I really got to know a person's ear very well because of the way the camera was placed. I'm like, wow, that's... I think he should be good hearing wise. It doesn't look like there's any problem with the canal.
Yeah, no obstructions.
You obviously clean well, but it's funny now that you mentioned it, John. I can remember the first couple of those Zoom calls. They're the ones, and you're going, oh yeah, it's some things never change.
Well, you know, I think it's very common that one of the questions I get from parents occasionally is, well, when do they mail out grades? When I was in college, I had one semester where they were still sending grades through the mail and everything else was electronic, you know, because that was early 2000s. And but that's still the mindset of, well, you're going to be sending out a grade report every semester, right? Through the mail that I'll get at home.
Yeah. No? And it's, you know what's really interesting too is that you put that in our age of technology and also the legalities and everything else.
Yeah,
parents having to understand the fact that they're not going to, like they did in high school. Yeah, you know, their school might have given them complete access to LMS and grades and things like that for their student, but now their student is an adult, and they're at a minimum has to be, you know, consent of the adult student.
The favorite acronym of most people in higher ed, FERPA.
I have heard that so many times in the last couple of months. You need a FERPA.
Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act of 1974. So that's the more interesting part, is that people think, well, no, you know, you. My parents called in, well, your school in the 80s was violating a law from 1974. It was not, it was so great that you had the right thing.
It was funny. One of the first calls that was on, I actually was Googling the acronym because they were throwing it about like everybody knew what it was. And I'm sure that there were a bunch of other people on their phones at the same time all going, wait a second, what is this thing that they're talking about?
Well,
a Furby? Are they talking about a Furby?
Here's the fun part about FERPA. So at our school, like many others, there is a release form that students can sign, and they can release exactly what they want to their parents.
Yep.
And I actually saw a student one time game the system. This is either the smartest student I've ever seen or the dumbest. I'm not sure which one it was. But on the form, there is a box that basically starts with the beginning, I hereby release the following information to the person named above. And then you have to fill in the box with what you're releasing. And some students just write everything and then, you know, all is fair game. This student copied that paragraph above it. I hereby release blah, 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 and didn't actually release anything. They just copied the paragraph. So I'm thinking, was mom standing next to you and just saw that you filled out the form and went, okay, good, he filled out that form, and was going to read the form and go, oh, you didn't release anything to us.
The only thing that would have been better is if he had actually done the old ipso lorem.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be a future attorney.
If he had been an IT student, he would have done that, yeah. But the other fun thing about it is that I, as a faculty member, all the FERPA release form means is that I am allowed to talk to you about things. It does not compel me to talk to you about things.
It's
and
not
so,
a
yeah, I've had parents where they'll go, well, I have a FERPA form on file. Yeah, but I'm not talking to you about that. You need to talk to your child about that. You know, that we're not having this conversation unless you would like to have your child in on the conversation and then the three of us can talk about it together. But
John,
I'm not going to release it.
I find it fascinating that a parent called a professor.
It has happened, and it happens quite a bit. Most of the time, I will say most of the time it is in a – it's from a place of support, and it's from a place of, I understand you might not be able to help me, but maybe you can.
Yeah.
But there have been times when it's, no, I'm paying the bills. I want to know. Okay, well, you need to talk to our registrar's office, and I'm not saying anything else.
So this is goes beyond a helicopter parent into like a Blue Thunder parent or something.
Oh yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I've noticed the abundance of information passed along to both students, incoming students, and their parents on. Here are options A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, all to get you as a student help and assistance and things you should be doing on your own, not requiring your parents to have to intervene. Here are all the resources and all the things you should be doing. And they keep on making that point abundantly clear. And they've done a very good job of making sure that they make it clear to parents, too, that there's a bunch of things your student can be doing. They shouldn't be needing you to call professors.
So let me ask you guys about, since, you know, you are a professor to you and you've got a student just going to one. I'm just kind of curious what's changed in the last 9 years, if anything. So one of the things that surprised me 9 years ago, or several things, was campus-wide Wi-Fi. I expected it in the room. But I wasn't quite sure if they were going to have campus-wide Wi-Fi, and they did, and that was pretty cool. Yeah. The other thing was, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there are printers in the dorms. I mean, high-speed, you know, large, you know, heavy-duty cycle printer, and the that they had tech support. You know, some of it was like student-run, but they had, you know, FTEs behind the students to back them up.
Yep.
And the other thing that really surprised me is in the campus library, they had workstations. And you would say, well, if everybody has a notebook, why did you need? And that's because they had, like, if I recall correctly, they had things like Adobe Photoshop and things you might not buy, you know, even on a student discount, but you might need for one project, you know, but you don't need it for 4 years. And they had Photoshop. I can't remember if they have laser cutters, but they have some really interesting stuff in there. For, you know, one-off kind of projects that you might, you know, not want to buy your own stuff for.
So I was in our case, and I'd be curious to hear, John, about your school. But in our case, it is campus-wide Wi-Fi. As a matter of fact, the dorm rooms do not have Ethernet drops. They use Wi-Fi for it. There are, depending on the dorms, because some of our dorms, being a Northeastern university that's been around for a while, some of our dorms are a little bit older, but the way they're laid out, they try to have study areas, and there are usually printers available in those study areas that you can connect to wirelessly. Like I said, if you bring your own, the rule is if you bring your own printer for your dorm room, then you've got to hook it up. They're not letting you attach that wirelessly. Interestingly enough, our school does not have, which is different from some of the other schools in the area that we looked at, our school does not have any cable agreements. There are no cable drops in any of the rooms, but you're free to use Wi-Fi to connect to any of the services that you'd want to. Which is another thing. Our library, again, it's interesting. Yeah, same thing. The library, when we looked at that, there's workstation areas. And you're absolutely right. I think access to printers that you normally wouldn't find in dorms, depending on what your majors are, they give you some access there. As well as depending on when your major, some of the buildings and some of the schools have specialized printers as well. And IT-wise, they've had IT runs summer hours all summer for incoming, and they keep telling the students in case they have any issues when they're first trying to get their email set up, or if there's and they can reach via email, via phone. And I'm trying to remember if they do have some other. I think there's like a campus page too that you can get to them and do chat as well in real time. So nice. Yeah, the networking is pretty interesting. My son, the big concern was obviously making sure that he could access YouTube TV and NFL Red Zone on Sundays. Mm-hmm. Because of his fantasy football league.
So,
use plural leagues.
So to put things in perspective, when I went many, 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 many years ago, the things that surprised me, the amenities that surprised me on campus was there was a bicycle shop so you could repair your bicycle, you know, and they had like patches for your tubes and stuff. I thought that was very cool because I did have a bicycle on campus, didn't have a car. And we had a full workshop where I learned to do like woodworking and cutting acrylics and to build things I would need for projects. So that was it. From a technology point of view, speaking of printers, so this is back in a day where, let's see, Windows did not exist. Yes. DOS did not exist. Yes. Mac OS, of course, did not exist. And so I had Unix. And which was cool because I love Unix. Yeah, but we were at one of the smaller UC campuses. I was up in UC Santa Barbara, and so we did not have a photo typesetter. So if you wanted to use TROF, if you guys remember what that is, the T is for typeset, you know, ROF, NROF, TROF. If you wanted to use TROF to get a typeset thing, you would spool out your TROF output to tape. The tape would be couriered down to UC San Diego, which, you know, had a typesetter. They would typeset at UC San Diego and courier it back to you. This took a little while. It's a little slower than, like, just printing it to a laser printer. But there was, of course, no laser printers either. So, yeah, it was a while ago.
Just so you know, Todd, my head started hurting the moment you said NROF and TROF.
Oh, yes, and, of course, there was no WYSIWYG. You know, you have to imagine what the output would look like.
The war wounds.
But, you know, we had good imaginations back then because, you know.
Yeah.
So I'll jump in and mention that all the things that you've just mentioned in terms of campus-wide Wi-Fi and printers and all that, that's pretty standard on most campuses these days. Yeah, and I do wish we had the bike shop and the workshop. That would be nice.
They were awesome, by the way.
So this might also be interesting. And when we talk about printing, I have not required a student to turn in a piece of paper to me in probably over 5 years.
That's awesome.
Absolutely everything that they do for my classes is electronic. And I don't see colleagues walking around with big stacks of paper anymore. In fact, we were talking recently in a meeting Friday about when you mark up papers, students don't read all your markup. So how do you give feedback? Because let alone put it on paper, they won't read that. If you use track changes, they won't do that. So what I literally do now is I do a screen recording as I'm reading their paper, and tell them, okay, I'm going to read your paper in real time and you're going to get my reactions. And it'll be things like this is a good opening. This sentence doesn't make any sense. You should change it. Sentence doesn't have, any support to
that
it.
That is awesome.
Or, I've just gotten to this point and I realized what you're getting at. You probably should talk about this earlier in the paper because I didn't understand it until we got two pages in. And at the end of it, I have a 6 or 7 minute video that I can post to them. They have to watch it from beginning to end if they want to get anything out of it. They can't just skim through it real quick and go, I don't want to. I'll deal with this later. But that's, as I was telling colleagues that, it's how we're kind of adapting and changing how we do things based on not just the technology available, but how students interpret what we're doing. Because track changes looks cool, but if no one reads it.
I love that because that's, to me personally, if somebody gave me feedback in that format, it would retain And I'm not saying that it wouldn't retain the other ways, but to me, it almost seems like that would really stick as I'm watching that, because it's as close to being real time interacting as you're reviewing, yeah, as if we were sitting face to face. And I would think that just from a comprehension level, it would be awesome.
And if the student zones out, as they might in a one-on-one real-time interaction, they can rewind.
Yeah.
But, you know, I find it fascinating. You're doing essentially what's called a reaction video on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's such an interesting take on it. And I got to say, this goes off because sometimes these reaction videos pop up in my YouTube, you know, recommended list. And I saw a guy, he didn't look that young, maybe in his 40s, maybe in his late 30s. And he does these reaction videos to old music, right? That he has never heard before, right? Like, and one of them was like James Brown, you know, and I'm seriously, you've never heard a James Brown song in your entire life. And you're like 40 years old or whatever you, or even if you're 30, right? Yeah. And you don't know who he is. And like, oh my goodness, our education system has failed people.
Well, I now, John, I think you have a future in Professor John, his paper unboxing videos. Okay, I'm opening up the document now, and the first thing I'm seeing is a font that really upsets me. You could really make some money off of this.
Yeah, Wingdings is not an acceptable font. Wingdings with Comic Sans.
Oh.
All caps.
Why are you yelling at me in this paper?
But you know, that that could be a very interesting entertainment genre, John. I mean, you know, you have other educators send you their favorite, and I use the word favorite in quotes, papers, which you read for the first time and react to it and say, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
or if you have a friend of mine when we were in grad school, says, take a look at this term paper this fella turned into me. I go, okay. And I'm looking. I said, wow, this is really well written. And he says, yes, that is the introduction to the master's thesis I wrote 2 years ago.
My brain's going off on this because you could keep the actual authors anonymous. Although nowadays, they'd probably be the first ones to jump in comments and go, hey, that was my paper you just blasted.
Yeah.
So speaking of things that you never thought you'd have to put in your course syllabus as a professor, this semester, I've always had to put in something that is akin to don't cheat, you know, don't plagiarize, etc.
Sure.
A couple of years ago, I had to start adding in don't use paraphrasing software because it produces gibberish, because that's what students were doing at that point. They would just use a paraphrase piece of software that
I didn't know there was such a
thing. Getting around plagiarism. Yeah, but it produces things that make no sense because it literally is just replacing words with, you know, synonyms. Now, my one this year is I have to put in a policy that says you cannot use an AI to generate the responses to my discussion questions, because that is now becoming a popular thing to do. And again, it produces responses that are very, they look okay at a glance, but they have no depth to them. So they're pretty easy to point out. But yeah, it's literally one of those things that if I don't spell it out and tell you this is not allowed, it is very, you know,
John,
easy for students to think I don't even know it exists.
As usual, you have told me something about in all my decades of life I have never heard of.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing we're not only recording audio, because if we recorded the video while you were talking, I did a Google search for paraphrasing software and my mouth just dropped open.
A reaction video.
There's one called Quillbot AI.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
I will send you to in the chat my syllabus for general psychology. You will probably find not only some of the things eye-opening, you will probably also get some good laughs out of it, because I also
Holy
tend to
molly.
Write things that are, you know, somewhat humorous to keep people awake.
There's many paraphrasing. So, John, again, you've blown my mind. I did not know this existed. There are so many paraphrasing tools. There's actually a list of the 10 best in 2022.
Yeah. which is probably just a paraphrasing of another site, you realize.
Oh, my.
Oh, that is too funny. But that, I, you know, it's funny that you said it, but when you mentioned it, it's this generation's version of gaming the system, which is always, it's been going on since the beginning of time. It's just, instead of paying somebody to write your paper now, you're asking AI to generate for you.
And, you know, they don't quite understand that we have, so, for example, if a student does use these things, and I suspect they're doing something, I generally give them either a CLOZE, C-L-O-Z-E test, where it's basically fill in the blank. So here's your sentence, fill in the word you used. And if they don't know their own sentence, words, then that's a problem. Or, you know, you literally just ask them in synchronous communication, hey, you said this, what does that mean? And if they can't answer, I'm pretty sure you didn't write it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry. I'm almost speechless.
It is amazing. It's nice to see that while things change, in certain ways they remain exactly the same.
It's pretty wild. Pretty wild.
Good to see that you're changing with the times too, John. Stay on top of them.
So I think all you need to know about how I view this is on the syllabus I send you guys, on page 6, there are all my additional rules, policies, and expectations. And the first one is general policy. And it reads, because this is kind of setting the tone for everything, if you make a mistake, tell me the truth. I realize we all make mistakes, and even though this syllabus makes me sound like a real blank, when it comes to my policies, insert your own expletive in the line, we may be able to work something out. However, if you lie to me, I suspect you are lying to me, or you've lied to me in the past, and or you do not communicate with me in a timely fashion, I will exercise the strictest interpretations of these policies. That means I will live up to that expletive.
This is the longest syllabus I've ever seen, John.
Yeah. Well, I mine are generally longer, but when you put it all together, I try to cover absolutely everything so that students know where they stand at any given time.
It's 12 pages for our fives of listeners.
Yes.
Or just shy of 12 pages, but wow. I don't think I could pass a quiz just asking what you wrote in your syllabus, John.
Oh, boy.
Wow, this is crazy. Awesome, though. Oh boy.
Yeah, there are many interesting random things in my syllabi, but and there are jokes, as Don is finding as he's reading through.
So as we near the end of our podcast, and it's going to be the end, not because we're running out of things to say, but because Teams is a 60-minute limit now. and we were at minute 49, and we started a little before this, before we started recording. So I wanted to ask Don, are there any tech surprises other than the ones you've mentioned, or tech purchases that you didn't think you were going to make, but you did, or you thought you were going to buy, but you didn't, that come to mind?
I think, like I said, I think it was the little things. The big things I kind of knew. You know, like I said, we need to get him a laptop. He recently had upgraded his phone, so that wasn't an issue for us. So we knew tech-wise that was the case. And after having conversations, and learning from the school, I think the big thing were the little accessories to support the tech that tend to make are the things that can slip through the cracks. Like I said, making sure you've got all this tech with power, and you got to make sure you've got power supply for that, to make sure things of that nature. I'm sure, what we experienced with my son's school, which, by the way, I keep on referring to it, is he's going to in Keene, New Hampshire, Keene State College. It's make sure you find out, of course, move-in day is always, there's something that's forgotten. But, you know, if you pay attention to what people say, you know, the online resources, it's 2022, whether it be the school itself or just in general, you can poke around. You could pretty much fill the gap on, and cover those little things. Those were the surprises that you don't think about. As far as the other end of it, the things that I thought we would need that we ended up not. Again, there wasn't that much tech wise. We knew up front, you know, kind of, especially like I said, when your kid is going into a major that the major itself kind of lends itself to what you know you need. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, it pays. My advice to parents is ask, depending on what their major is, that's going to dictate, you know, yep. a lot of times what they need for tech,
right.
You know, how much or how little of a kind of tech they need. I mean, a lot of folks were asking, can they get away with just an iPad? And it's like,
that sounds, yeah, I guess depending on your major, you might be able to, but it'd probably be rough.
You know, he's going to a smaller liberal arts school. I could see some of the majors, if he had an iPad Pro, you know, and had all the accessories to where, I mean, essentially it is, you know, a small MacBook, you might be able to do it. But yeah, I think that's the reason why there weren't a lot of surprises either way was we were very fortunate in that there was a lot of information provided to us that filled it in. And again, that's the big difference nowadays versus a generation ago where you were trying to all figure it out. Maybe you get some information, but you know, there's so many places you can look to see, and depending on your school, it doesn't hurt for you or your student to ask the school, you know, or ask peers or things like that. Find resources to ask.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's tech-wise, it's been a good and unsurprising in a good way experience, or not too surprising. Yeah. So that's good to hear.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And don't, all things, when it's an incoming student, it's the first year is the biggest outlay for all this stuff, you know, especially if you plan it appropriately. This is the one thing is, yes, there's going to be sticker shock and it's not just tech, it's in general. Suiting up your student for freshman year with things between dorm and between, you know, tech and all that stuff, that the investments, the worst investments are the first year investments going in. But if you do it smart as well, you know, as I said, it's don't buy something that you're going to, is it like we always say, we all say when it comes to tech, because we've been down this road. All of us personally have been down this road. Don't buy something that's going to be obsolete in a year.
Speaking of iPads, you know, again, this is 2013, but when I sent my daughter off, I bought her a MacBook Pro and an iPad, a full-size iPad. I don't think the minis were out. No, the minis were out, but I got her a full-size iPad. I told her, you can carry, and a keyboard. I got her a keyboard, too, a Bluetooth keyboard. I said, well, you can carry this, you know, iPad and the keyboard instead of the notebook. It's a lot lighter, or you can just carry the iPad, no keyboard, and type in the screen. You know, it turns out she never did. She just carried the MacBook Pro everywhere she went. She says, it's not a problem.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's one of the other things. I mean, depending on how tech-savvy your student is, there are things, you know, I mean, even the little things like if you like taking notes, but you want something with some digital, something like a Rocket Book, for example, where they can then scan and do OCR or something like that. There's those little permutations. And that's really, you know, kind of on how does your individual student want to leverage the technology. You know, there's the baseline needs, and then there's always those little things, too, that you can find.
Okay. So I am watching the clock, literally. We're at 59 minutes, 22 seconds of the total time. So before it cuts me off in 31 seconds, I'm going to say thank you to Don. Good luck to your son. And his freshman year of college, exciting, I know. Scary, exciting, whatever. I remember when we dropped off our daughter, she hugged us and she says, "You're abandoning me." I says, You wanted to come here. You know?
It's always the parents' fault.
But at any rate, thanks again for joining us, Don. Always fun talking to you. And we will talk to you again. This has been Mobile Views Podcast, whatever the heck it is, 419, I think.